Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad you're listening this morning. We welcome back to the show Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And she's here with us every month in the spring, the summer, and into the early fall. And we talk about taking care of plants that grow in the home landscape, trees, shrubs, flowers, vegetables. Also, we can take houseplant questions as well. That's the idea. We do these on a regular basis so that you can call in if you have questions. This is the next to the last time here in the year 2000.
How sad.
She's always been very good because she says, you know, I'd come every month. And I don't know why that is. It's just that then when I don't see you for a couple of months, then when I see you again, it's just all the more special.
Oh, sure. Oh, okay.
We'll it's absence. That. It makes the heart grow fonder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's true. It's absolutely true. Well, in any case, she's here to answer your plant questions, and I'll just sit here and vegetate.
so to speak, 333-WILL
or 9455. That's for Champaign Urbana, folks. And we do also have toll-free line. Go anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. We have some callers. We're getting some folks lined up. Would you like just here at the beginning to take a second and talk about an event or two?
Sure, sure. Actually, one of the things I did want to talk about, and actually the two are related, is the City of Urbana has a new State Streets Tree Trail Guide. And as you know, in Urbana, we have a bunch of streets named after states, Oregon, all those good ones. There's some magnificent trees, not just on these streets, but there's some magnificence on the trees on these streets. And now there's a new tree trail guide that's free to anybody that's interested in it. It's really a wonderful opportunity to get you familiar with the diversity that's out there. I think people may be familiar with oaks and maples and stuff, but there's a lot of other things out there. You can pick up the State Street Tree Trail Guides either at the Urbana Public Works office, or you can come to the U of I Extension office here in Champaign County, and it's located 801 North Country Fair Drive in Champaign. You can pick those up, and really a great opportunity to get some ideas about what trees are out there. And in conjunction with that, we're actually having a program on Saturday, October 21st. It's going to start at 10 o'clock at Illini Grove, which is on the corner of Lincoln and Pennsylvania Avenues there in Urbana. We're going to do Mike Brunk, the city arborist, and myself. We're going to do some presentations a little bit on basic tree care, pruning, identification, those kind of things. And if people bring their bicycles, we're going to actually go on a guided tour of these trees that are on the tree trail guide. So let's hope for good weather. Mm-hmm. Or you don't have to do that. You can just pick up the tree trail guide on that day and then go out on your own if you like. So that's going to be Saturday, October 21st, starts at 10 o'clock at Illini Grove.
Great. Okay. Well, we have questions here. The lines are full, and we'll get as many folks as we can, starting with a caller in Aurora. And this is line number 4. Hello.
Yes, hi. What is the botanical name for Easter lily, and how deep do you plant it, and how far apart?
Okay. So you're talking about the white?
The white plant that everybody gets for Easter.
Yeah, I think that one's Lilium longiflorum or something like that. Longiflorum.
I called several places and Lily Young.
And then it's, I think it's longiflorum. I think it's something like L-O-N-G-I-F-O.
R-U-M.
Isn't that sound right?
Yeah.
I think that's the one that's the Easter lily, right off the top of my head. That would be at least be my guess.
Okay.
But it's certainly a lilium. It's in that particular genus.
Well, I wanted to be specific because I wanted to know how deep to plant it and how far apart.
Right, right. Normally, for those, we're probably looking at 8 inches, at least 8 inches for those, so they're fairly deep. And then how far apart, again, is probably about 6 to 8 inches.
Okay. And then, is there anything new about iris and what to put on them for a little tiny insect and the browning of the leaves, just a little bit? It's not real bad, the plant, but I don't want it to become, a problem. What is there anything this time of the year I can put on an iris, a dwarf iris?
Right, right. I'm not sure. Are you've actually seen an insect on there? A lot of times
a little teeny one.
Because a lot of times that browning is actually from a disease, from a fungal disease, and not necessarily from insect.
And it isn't a lot of it, but I don't want anything to happen to these beautiful dwarf iris.
Right, right. It, certainly iris borer is something that does start in the leaves, but that's something, you know, that's a little caterpillar, and that's not a little insect.
No, it wasn't anything
so
like
that. So it's nothing like that.
Is there any general thing that I could do for it?
I think probably your best bet is just good sanitation this time of year. I would go ahead and remove the foliage.
Oh, okay.
Just cut the foliage off and get it out of there.
And then I wanted to suggest something, if I might. I have a copy of Illinois Fruits and Vegetable Garden Schedule that I got from your Extension Bureau, and it is just such a delightful calendar. This time of the year, it says, continue fall crop late and late planting of vegetables. You know, it gives it for the south and the north.
Uh-huh.
Pick or buy delicious and golden delicious apples and other varieties as they mature. And it just dig your sweet potatoes before a hard frost
right. And
start curing them. It just has, you know, it says enjoy your last sweet corn of the season. It's just a delightful calendar. If anybody... I would suggest if anybody would be interested in that to get one from the University of Illinois Cooperative Extension Service. And then they have, as you know, many other. They have about 4, 8, 12, 12 or 15 different booklets that you can send for. But this is such a fun thing. I just love reading it every month. Wanted to suggest it
right.
for anybody else.
Right. Now, that particular one may not be in print anymore, I will tell you. I don't know when you got that one.
It's very old.
Yeah, that one may not be in print anymore, unfortunately, like a lot of publications. But we do have one in our office that actually myself and some of the Master Gardeners produced. And it's called The Gardening Guide for Illinois. And it's the same kind of thing where it just gives you, okay, this is the time to do whatever, whether it's lawns or herbs or vegetables or whatever. But that certainly is available in our office.
And how much is that?
It's at $250. So it's quite a bargain, and I think people enjoy it, especially if you're new to the area or just not real sure when to do what.
And it, like it says, dig peanuts and cure before storing. Enjoy the last sweet corn of the season.
Yeah, right, yeah.
It's just a fun thing to read.
Well, good, good. I'm glad you said that.
All right, thank you for the call. And certainly we can remind folks that what is now called Extension, U of I Extension, does have a lot of different publications to advise you on taking care of various kinds of plants and things like you have fruit trees, you have vegetables, all that kind of stuff. And the extension person in your area, and they're all over the state, they have all these sorts of things. So you can look them up in the phone book and find out where the office is, and you can go down there and see what kind of things they have.
And I know sometimes it's difficult in the phone book, but generally you're going to find it either under University of Illinois or you're going to find it under whatever county you're in. So sometimes the phone book, you have to sort of look around a little bit, but you can find it, and all the counties have some sort of office or satellite office and have access to a lot of these brochures. We also have a great website, which is if you're just as soon get your information that way, you certainly can check that out, and it's at www.urbext for Urban Extension, and then it's .uiuc.edu. And there's all kinds of great horticulture information on that, too, so lots of ways to get info.
Okay. Our guest here this morning, Sandy Mason. She's a U of I extension person in Champaign County and is with us monthly here. We do the show on lawn and garden care. Questions, welcome. 333-9455. That's for Champaign Urbana folks. And toll free 800-222-9455. We'll go next to a caller in Paris on line one. Hello.
Yes, Sandy, always glad to hear you.
Oh, good.
I've got a question about pussy willow. I've got my pussy willow. It's huge. It's like a shrub that's it's a little bit taller than it is wide, and I'm wanting to cut it back. And I wonder if it would be better to cut it back like as a shrub or cut it back to kind of resemble more of a tree.
To be honest with you, I think that's sort of personal preference. I think they generally, from what I've seen, they generally want to grow as a bush, as a shrub, to be honest with you. That's their general tendency.
Excuse me, if I cut it way back, will more branches come out?
Yeah, they sucker up from the bottom.
Okay.
Yep, they sure will.
When's the best time to cut that back?
Actually, to enjoy the pussy willows, generally you'd want to do that after they flower.
Okay.
That would be the best time, and that way you can maintain those.
Okay. I thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Next caller is in Downs. This is line number two. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I had a problem with tomatoes this year. I had some white stuff under the skin. Does this ring a bell?
Hmm. White.
You can actually see it. From the outside, you can see, you know, kind of streaky spots.
Hmm.
That are more opaque and lighter through the skin. And then when you cut a cross-section, you can see this white that's right under the skin.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't ring a bell?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's a couple things. I think, and you don't think of sun scorch because they certainly can get that. It's more of a kind of a beigey area on the outside, so it's probably not that.
This is really under the skin.
Okay.
All my tomatoes had it. Cherry tomatoes, big tomatoes.
They all had it? Wow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not every one, but every kind that I planted.
Mm-hmm. I have heard of that, to be honest with you. I'm trying to think that would be one that probably you'd want to bring in a sample and let us take a look at it and find out for sure rather than me just sort of guessing. But I know there are some weather conditions that sometimes can make that worse.
Hmm.
And I don't know whether, I to be honest with you, I haven't had anybody else complain about this. So whether it was just in your particular garden there was a problem for one reason or another. Probably on a lot of that stuff, one of the things with tomatoes is to make sure you do things like even watering. That's one of the big things. They actually can get a lot of problems. Blossom end rot is one, but certainly this problem can also be...
I never have blossom end rot.
Yeah.
Pretty good about watering. So
but keeping it evenly moist is important, too. But you may want to check, or you can give me a call down at the office, and maybe I can give you a better idea about what that is. And my number is 333-7672, and I'd be glad to talk to you a little bit further about that.
Can I ask another question?
Sure.
I have a lot of potted plants, and they're right now undercover. And I want to take out things that will come in as houseplants, like ivy and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
What is the best way to do that so we don't shock them terribly and, you know, so they do the best?
Yeah.
Sometimes I think I'm real mean to them.
And they know it. Believe me.
I know.
They know.
I mean, I'm bringing them in. I usually wait until the last day. You know,
everybody does. Yeah, everybody does.
Ideally,
right, the thing would be to actually get them acclimatized. In other words, finding this sort of halfway house where the light temperatures are lower, they get used to that little drier air. So ideally, it'd be nice if you had some place, whether it's a maybe unheated porch or some place where they get those, especially lower light, because that's one of the biggest shocks that they have is that you've had them outside. Even if they've been in the shade, they're certainly getting a lot more sun than they are indoors. And so that's probably one of the biggest shocks is just that change in light. So if there's a way to sort of get them used to that lower light levels gradually, that's ideal.
Do you think it's light more than... than the temperature?
I believe it's light,
okay.
Much more so than temperature. Temperature is certainly something. Also, obviously, if they're tropical plants, then they're not going to like those cooler temperatures. But the light is the big problem. So and ideally, if you could do that over like a 2-week period minimum, that would be the best thing. But you know, like in this year, we had that. You know, we had really hard, you know, cold temperatures very early in the season, and so sometimes it gets very difficult. So if you can start thinking about even in August or 1st of September, start thinking about getting those plants moved to areas where they're getting lower light, that kind of thing, so they'd actually have that maybe that whole month of September.
Give them up outside that early.
I know. No,
that's
none of us do.
Problem.
I know. None of us do.
And is there anything to do with, sometimes I think I'm bringing in critters like,
sure.
I always bring in large critters, but things like spider mites and that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
I think
mm-hmm.
I'm dragging in with me. Is there something you would do before you brought them in?
Yeah, one thing is if you're bringing in the pots and everything, I think one of the real important things is to actually, you know, drench the soil, get out a hose and just keep drenching the soil. And all those guys, ants, pill bugs, all those, you know, whatever, millipedes, whatever that are hanging out in that soil are going to be driven out. And I think that's, we create a lot of problems, I think, because we do bring these guys in because they enjoy that kind
Most
of soil.
Most definitely transferred to something smaller, usually. usually on.
Right, right. But certainly that would be one thing. But also at the same time, while you're doing that, you're also washing the plant off.
Yes.
And so that certainly can help for a lot of those kind of critters. The things I notice, too, are ladybugs. You know, they start overwintering in my potted plants. And so that's something you certainly want to make sure that you get rid of before you bring them in. I think probably as a general thing, if you're concerned about spider mites or something, you might also spray them with something like an insecticidal soap. It doesn't have a residual, but certainly if there happens to be anything there that you're not really seeing very well, at least it will get rid of that. But it's always one of those things. I think they spontaneously generate or something inside, because about the time January rolls around, you start noticing spider mites and all these other things. So it is one of those things that you can take care of to some extent, but I think you still have to watch during the winter months.
Is there anything systemic that you can do outside, you know, before you bring them in? So it's not quite so...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. Generally, we wouldn't recommend that unless we know that there's insects on there, to be honest with you.
And I hope this is quick. Is there any way to sterilize? I mean, I have big pots, and I have a bunch of them. And if I don't replace the dirt, I end up with a lot of plants just rotting off.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Is there any way I can sterilize that?
Sure. Actually, you can pasteurize soil by either putting it in the oven.
Yeah,
or you can put it, I know, not, you know, it has an earthy smell, you know,
well,
has the earthy
bunches
smell.
Of it. I just
yeah.
So much.
Well, you could also do it on the, if you have like a Weber grill or something outdoors, but obviously you're going to have to do it in small batches and it may take a lot more time than you want to deal with.
Can I put plastic and put it out in the sun somewhere over the winter, and would that do it any good?
Yeah, it probably isn't over the winter time. It's not going to, the temperatures aren't going to get up high enough.
Okay.
If you did it over the summertime, sure, the temperatures would be high enough and you wouldn't have any problem with it that way, but that may not be the route you want to go. Or you may just want to replenish the soil each year and put it, you know, put it in your compost pile.
It's expensive, and it...
I know. I know exactly what you're saying.
Much of it. Okay, thank you very much.
Well, thanks for the call. We just keep going here. We'll go to Freeport next, line 3. Hello?
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
If I can get in a word edgewise, I spoke to you earlier this summer, ma'am, you know, about the tomato tree plant.
Uh-huh.
Yes, ma'am. Well... The thing is, stands about 2.5 feet high now, but no tomatoes.
Wow.
It's in the colder weather up here in northwest Illinois. Of course, I have to bring it in at night now.
Sure.
But I suppose I won't get anything till next year, if then. Tomatoes?
Yeah, I'm surprised it's that short, too. It didn't get it. When did you start it? Did you start it from seed?
They didn't ship it to me until 15th of July.
Wow. That's probably why it's particularly short.
It grew so rapidly. Produce something.
Yeah, that's probably one of the reasons. I guess, I assume if you're going to keep it over the winter, unless you have a greenhouse or something, I don't think you're going to see much off of it until...
I have no greenhouse, but they keep it inside, and then it's going to really blossom.
Yeah, but next year you'll have quite a plant, I'll bet, if you keep it over the winter.
They're supposed to grow up to 12 feet high.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, so you'll have quite a plant next year.
I'd have to transplant it in the soil then, or what?
I don't know what size pot you have, but certainly I would think anything less than a gallon is going to be too small. And I would think probably something like a 5-gallon, if you've got it in a container, I would think of like one of those 5-gallon buckets or something, actually.
I hate to plant it in the soil because it's a subtropical plant and it should be protected.
Right, right. You'd have to dig it up. But I would think like a 5-gallon, those 5-gallon buckets, you could probably get it through the winter that way if you have a fairly sunny spot and... That kind of thing.
Well,
your biggest problem is going to be some insects, unfortunately.
In the house?
Oh, sure.
Hello?
Yes, you will find insect problems indoors.
Well, use some sort of spray on it, or what?
Again, for most of the soft-bodied insects like spider mites and stuff, insecticidal soap actually is fairly effective.
Insecticidal soap?
Uh-huh.
You spray that on?
Right.
Okay, well, look for some tomatoes.
Yeah, good luck.
All right.
Yeah, too bad.
We'll go on here to Champagne, line number 1. Hello.
Hi there.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question about red raspberries. A couple of weeks ago, the people next door were cleaning out some growth in their backyard and discovered all these raspberry bushes that they were just going to trash. And I said, oh, please don't do that. So I dug up about 4 of the sturdier-looking ones and put them in my yard with some root starter solution to get them going.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, they're hanging in there, but I'm wondering, because it's so close to cold weather, I've covered them at night the last few nights.
Mm-hmm.
Could I have
mm-hmm.
done that? What can I do to make sure these guys make it through the winter?
Yeah, you know, they're actually pretty tough. If you got even a pretty good root system on these things, they're really pretty tough plants, to tell you the truth. And that's why they've been living back there, and they didn't even realize they were back there because they're such tough plants.
Okay.
So I'm not sure there's too much you're going to have to. Probably what I would do is maybe put lots of shredded leaves or something like that on them, just sort of help protect them a little bit over this first winter. But then after that, they're so tough that generally you don't have to do much of anything.
One other quick question. Mm-hmm. I have the most pitiful-looking blueberry bush you've ever seen. It's hanging on,
yeah.
But I'm not sure it's going to make it through the winter.
Yeah.
Anything? I'm assuming that I shouldn't dig it up and bring it in because
no.
I said when I bought it that they need cold weather.
Right, right.
But this poor thing, I don't know. I've mulched it with pine needles because
mm-hmm.
I heard that's good for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's, like I said, it's barely hanging on.
Yeah.
Is there anything else I can do? It's still green,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
it's probably not even 8 inches tall, and it looks really bad. Should I just forget it?
Well, I think at this point, one of the things, did you happen to change the soil pH before you put it in? You add some sulfur or something like that to it?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. You really need to do that. And ideally, it would be something we'd probably do in the fall and then plant them in the spring. So it actually, the sulfur would have a little bit of a chance to work. And that's really one of the big reasons why blueberries don't do very well. They like a low pH. They like pHs around 4.5 or so. And depending on where you are, you may be at 6 or 7 or it's just too high for them. And so they really struggle along, and that's probably what's going on with this guy. At this point, I'm not sure what you can really do other than try to protect it for the winter, and then hopefully, if it's still got halfway decent, you know, green leaves on it, then I'd say there's probably a pretty good chance for it.
And I've put it in, I think, a pretty protected area.
Yeah,
I make my garage so the north wind won't. Get it.
Right, right. And I think what I would do is probably, you know, the rabbits really love them. So if you have any rabbits.
That. And squirrels, too.
Yeah. You're probably going to have to put a little chicken wire or something around them. And then as the temperatures drop, then I'd probably just put a lot of shredded leaves in there inside with the chicken wire to try to help protect it. And then next year, you might think about, or even this fall, you might actually think about whether you're going to move it or not. But if there's some place where you can actually mend the soil, add sulfur, peat moss, all those kind of good things yet this fall, and then thinking about next spring, I'm going to move it into a site where it's a little happier.
Okay.
So even if it's just, you know, a couple feet over, but it's so much easier to change that soil pH, add sulfur and all those kind of things if the plant's not there.
How much sunlight does a blueberry bush actually need?
Actually, they're very shade tolerant, believe
it
or not, out of all the fruits.
It's going to be pretty shady.
Yeah. Out of all the fruits. I think they do better if they have late afternoon shade. They really don't like that hot sun.
That's what it's got. That's why I put it where it is.
Sure, sure.
I don't know if it's not doing well because the critters have been bothering it or what, but I will try to get him through the winter.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good luck.
All right, thanks. We are about midway through this part of Focus with Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And in the spring, summer, and early fall, she's here. We do these programs giving you the chance to call and ask questions about things that grow in the home landscape. Grass, trees, shrubs, vegetables, fruit, houseplants, any and all those kinds of things. You got some kind of problem, you're not quite sure how to deal with it. Maybe you need a little bit of advice about putting things to bed for the winter, or you're already maybe thinking about next year. Any of all of those questions are certainly welcome. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. And toll free anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. We have another Champaign caller. They're next, line two. Hello.
Hi. I have a question. I have a small, established wildflower patch, coneflower, laetrus, black-eyed Susan, that sort of thing. And a few years ago, I noticed in the corner of it that about midsummer, the black-eyed Susan would start to die. It would get like a moldy
mm-hmm.
leaf. And I took some, this summer it got much worse, and I took it in to a garden center, and they said it was some kind of fungus, and they suggested that I use a fungicide. And I did that, and it didn't really do a lot of good. So mm-hmm. what I'm wondering now, I usually leave this just standing in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if I should cut it down and really let it be exposed to the winter, or what I can do now to get it off to a better start next year and try to kill whatever's consuming my wildflower patch.
Yeah. It was probably powdery mildew.
Powdery mildew, yes.
Yeah, that's what I've seen quite a bit, actually, on black-eyed Susans, and actually a lot of other plants will get it. And some years it's worse than others. And it generally doesn't kill the plant. Generally, the plant does come back, unless you've got some other problems. Generally,
they always come back, but then by the end
they look
of the
bad. Yeah, I know what you mean. And you're absolutely right. Good sanitation is important. I would go ahead and remove the foliage because those funguses will hang out, you know, over the winter on that old foliage. And so if you can get that out of there, that will help. But I will tell you, you know, powdery mildew spores are all over the place. And so it's very difficult to get rid of them completely. Also, if there's some way that, you know, with this wildflower patch, I don't know if there's some way that you can open it up to better air circulation, that will actually help. I know with wildflower patches, there's usually lots of flowers and that kind of thing. It makes it very difficult.
It's surrounded by my house on two sides as well.
So it makes it. And that will make it worse, to tell you the truth. The other thing you might think about in the future is there are some of the black-eyed Susans that are actually not as prone to powdery mildew. And I know you're probably trying for maybe a little bit more natural look to this thing, but you can actually get some black-eyed Susan varieties that are certainly much more resistant to powdery mildew than maybe what you have right now. So certainly the older varieties are very prone to it.
I was trying to plant things that were truly native plants. That's what I've got. Now, if I'm going to go this sort of fungicide route, should I start putting it on before I see any problems?
Yep. And that you're absolutely right, and that's one of the real problems with a lot of these funguses is that we don't know, we don't see it until it's happened, and then by the time it's happened, it's really too late.
So that's what I should really say.
Yeah, you really have to. Generally, powdery mildew is one of those that shows up a little bit later in the season. It's not like some of the other diseases that we see, and so probably you're talking about maybe in June or so, you're really going to have to start thinking about if you want to go the fungicide route to go ahead and use a fungicide. But I would really think about resistant varieties and actually getting some of those in there, and in the long term, that's probably a better solution for you, I would think.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Mm-hmm. We have a sort of growing near our house a plant that I had been told was called false sunflower. Now, I don't know if that's really what
could
it
be.
Is. It looks like it's a wild prairie plant. They get very tall, about 8
mm-hmm.
feet,
uh-huh.
and they have a daisy-like flower that's up right at the very top.
Mm-hmm.
So you get these
mm-hmm.
tremendously tall things, and they also have this they get this powdery mildew, it doesn't seem to hurt the plants. It's just not very attractive.
You're absolutely right. And unfortunately, there's a lot of plants, and some years it's worse. I think this past year I noticed a lot more powdery mildew on a lot of the plants that I had as well. And so unfortunately, the fungicide route it's the same thing. It's probably something you would have to do every year. You'd have to do it before the disease occurs. And is that really a route that people want to go as part of their maintenance program? And that's why we have lots of new varieties, whether it's black-eyed Susan. Bee Balm is another one that often gets powdery mildew. Phlox mm-hmm. gets powdery mildew. Zinnias get powdery mildew, and the nice thing is a lot of the breeders are looking for those that are resistant to that particular disease, and so generally if you look around in some of the catalogs, you'll find some that are resistant, and that's probably in the long run a better route to go.
And if you're going to try doing fungicide, does you only have to put that on once, or do you have to continue?
Unfortunately, generally what you're trying to do is just protect. You're trying to protect the leaves, and then as the plant grows, you need to continually protect those new leaves. And so, generally, one spray is not going to do it, and you may have to do it as many as 4 times, and that gets to be kind of a maintenance pain, I think.
Okay, we'll go on here, and let's go to line number 4. This is Arcola.
Yes, I have 2 questions. One is back on the blueberry. Does a blueberry bush have a life, expectancy, where it stops producing later on in its life? I mean, is there a time limit?
There probably is. Probably none of us have probably seen those, to tell you the truth, unless you're in some of the areas where they've had blueberry plants for a very long time. I know there's some that we've had on campus that are probably 10, 15 years old, and they're wonderful, these large shrubs, and still producing and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not a real short term like we might think with, maybe strawberries or something like that, where you really feel like you have to get new ones. I'm not sure where you're – you just thought maybe one of them had course.
I have a friend who has a blueberry patch, and they were told, of course, that their soil was appropriate for this, so they mm-hmm. planted a large planting. But their their blueberries have, in the last couple, 3 years, consistently got less.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that the pH, I mean, it's a natural pH balance, so it's not that aspect. But it's, it was just that we were wondering if the bushes were, you know, their life expectancy.
Mm-hmm.
And they have replaced some of them and added, you know, some new
pieces.
But then they have about four different kinds, so.
Right. And I guess the other thing, you know, there's a certainly some years they might be more prolific than others. Generally, they do, even though they don't require cross-pollination, you actually get better production if they get cross-pollination. So I would also wonder about, you know, are there bees or insects around there actually helping them to do some cross-pollination? We've certainly seen some decline in the wild bees in the last few years. And so that's a real problem. So sometimes you see there's other things going on there that maybe is not as prolific.
We've had to battle the Japanese beetle, which...
That doesn't help matters any either. So it sounds like...
They're all netted, so, you know, as far as that's concerned. But it's just the production seems to be down.
Yeah, I have a feeling there's probably some other things going on. And certainly they need to be pruned periodically to get some of the newer growth and that kind of thing, sort of rejuvenate them to some extent. So there may be some other things they could do if it really seems like they've gotten old enough where they're just not producing as well.
Also, my second question was with the hollyhock. We have some lovely gardens at our place here, and we do have varieties of the hollyhock, but we have some kind of a miner that runs around inside the leaf,
right?
And they're all infected. And I didn't. As a matter of fact, about halfway during the season, I just cut them all down. Of course, they come back up, and they're fine until they start get. What is? Should you again pre maintenance prior to as they're coming up, or is there something? What is this thing?
Yeah, they do. Sometimes you will see leaf miners on hollyhocks, and it's another one of those that's probably not really hurting the plant all that much, but aesthetically they don't look all that great.
They don't. Is there any way to treat those?
Yeah, you probably have to do an insecticide treatment. I would really have to check to see what the timing would be on that, but you'd have to put an insecticide actually before it occurs. So if you can think back when that happened, or you can check with me at my office, I could find out maybe a little bit more info.
Before the blossoms start.
So you have an idea.
When the blossom starts to shoot up, then it begins to show, and of course it comes from the bottom and moves on up. You know, it'll still bloom, but it has no leaves.
Right. They just don't look very good, do they? or you could just plant something really tall in front of them. So you get the flowers, and you don't have to worry about the leaves. Maybe.
Right.
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a pre before.
Yeah, you'd have to, because once they get inside the leaf, there isn't too much you can do about it at that point other than removing the leaves, which is what you've done.
Yeah. Okay. But there's no way to rid the soil of that.
No. Unfortunately,
and
it's not really in the soil.
If I went out and bought new hollyhocks, they would end up the same way.
Now, you know, there may be some that are show some resistance to that. I've never seen that listed as one of the resistance, you know, on those particular plants. But are these particularly old varieties?
Yes, we have doubles, we have reds, we have pinks, we have whites,
You might try some other ones, because I've never really seen it on my plants, but I've had people mention it, and they get it on there, so I don't know whether there is some difference. But you might try a few other ones and see if they don't show some resistance to it.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for the call. You know, I think that this summer was the first time in my yard that I really was conscious of seeing Japanese beetles.
Yeah.
And maybe they were there, and I just wasn't noticing. This summer, Phil Nixon was here. He said he was thinking about bringing me a jarful, saying, "Here, need any of these?" And I told him, "No, I think I have some now because I really noticed them."
Man.
And I guess it's they're just continue to spread out. And even if you don't have them, chances are sometime in the future, you're going to notice them, and there's not much you can do.
Yeah, it is one of those things that we have seen in certain areas. They seem to be getting more and more populations. One of the big problems is, of course, they're flying in. So it's not, you know, even if you try and treat the grubs in your own lawn or whatever, it doesn't mean they're not going to fly in. And so there's certainly some problems with that in control. And they like so many different plants. I mean, that's the other thing. And they always travel in these huge hordes, and you don't just get one or two. You always get these But one of the things they have found is that if you can control those first ones that come in, those actually seem to attract other ones later. And so when you first notice them, if you can get rid of them, get rid of the foliage, because actually even that feeding damage actually will attract other ones. So if you can get rid of those first ones that you see and get rid of that foliage, that does seem to reduce the numbers that you get later. And so it is important, I think, to make sure you monitor what's going on in your own yard.
Okay. We'll go on here, too. Let's see. I think Chicago, line number one. Hello.
Good morning. What is the proper use of the insecticidal soap that you talk about? Do you spray that on the leaves and rinse it off?
No, you don't rinse it off.
Oh, you leave it on there.
Right, right. It's a soap you leave on. You can get it as a ready-to-use product, or you can get it as a concentrate. Either one. You need to get good coverage with that. That's probably the big thing about the soaps is it really just kills those insects that are there. So it doesn't have a residual. It is one of those that has to be a contact kind of thing. You have to actually spray it on the insect. And so good coverage is particularly important. So you may have to sort of tip the plant a little bit, spray underneath the leaves, because we know that's where spider mites and a lot of other insects like to hang out. So you need good coverage. And you're probably going to have to do it more than once, depending on what insect you have. So probably one application is not going to do it. But I guess the good news is that it's a pretty safe product, because it's just a specially formulated soap to be used on plants. And so that's sort of the good news about
any special brand on that?
There's a couple of them out there. I know Ortho makes it. Safers is probably the one that's been around. We've probably seen the most. Safers insecticidal soap, and you can find that fairly readily. I will tell you that if you do use the concentrate, to make sure that you might want to actually use something like distilled water or something when you use those, because they have found some problems with high pH. If you have water that's particularly high pH, like some city waters are, there are some problems with that. So.
Does that get in the soil and then doesn't do any damage when it drips down into the soil?
No, that's not a problem.
Can you use that on all plants? Like, I had a croton, the leaves were falling off, and it seemed that they took over. Is that natural with a croton for the leaves to fall off from time to time, or is it they said they had mites on it?
Yeah, they certainly get spider mites. That's one of their big things, unfortunately. They're also a very high light plant, so they need a lot of light. And sometimes indoors they just aren't getting enough light, and so they seem to really start to fail, especially this time of year as we start to getting lower light levels, that kind of thing. But certainly spider mites will make the leaves fall off. If they get too dry, the leaves will fall off. So that's another thing. So there'd be several things like there that might be.
Does that soap work on all plants, or some plants you can't use it on?
Well, read the label. I think there are a few things I think it's recommend. I'm not sure about Boston ferns, some of those. I think there actually are a couple of plants listed on there that it should not be used. But as with all insecticides, make sure you read the label. It'll tell you which plants it shouldn't be used on.
Would a croton work on a north-facing window, facing north?
Wow, probably not enough light.
Not enough light.
Yeah, you almost need it like in the east or west or south or something like that, where actually it's going to get some light. And it'd be even better if you had something where it's more of a sunroom, where you might actually be getting light up from more than one direction. They're a little tough in the wintertime to get them.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. About 10 minutes left here on Focus with Sandy Mason from U of I Extension in Champaign County, taking your questions on taking care of plants in the home landscape, houseplants too, but also we can talk about trees and shrubs and flowers, those sorts of things. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455, and we'll talk next with someone in Champaign on line two. Hello.
Hello. I buy plants with the best of intentions of putting them in the ground, and I have, some hostas and some of last year's mums, and I was wondering, should I plant them or should I try and wait till next year?
I would get them in the ground as soon as you can,
okay,
to be honest with you.
Late.
No, I don't think so. And usually, it even looks like this week the temperature is going to raise, and we're going to have at least halfway decent weather where you can get them in the ground.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. To Urbana, line three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Ms. Mason, I, 2 or 3 years ago, bought a lilac plant from a local store, and it's about, it's no more than about 6 inches high, and it's never grown more than a few leaves, and it's never flowered. I've had some fungal problems. I transplanted it into a more sunlit area, but it's just not growing. Nothing's happened to it.
Wow, I would want
to do about it.
Yeah, normally they're pretty vigorous plants, the lilac shrubs. They generally take off and pretty vigorous. So I guess what you might want to think about doing is probably getting a little late to do that, but you could probably still do it now. I think I would dig it up and see what's going on with the roots, to be honest with you.
Huh, okay.
Because I would think there's something. Either it's, for one reason or another, it's just not sending out the roots, because you should really start to see a lot more growth on that at this point, to be honest with you.
What can I do to encourage rooting?
Well, you might try something. I would think about where, I assume it's not an area where it's getting too wet at any time. Or
no, not now.
So
no,
that's,
I don't think so.
Okay, because that would certainly be one thing. Make sure it's getting plenty of light. That would be the other thing.
It is now.
It is now?
Yes, right. And I transplanted it last year.
Oh, okay.
Because it was getting very moldy, and it was getting very shaded there.
Yeah.
And now it's in a fairly well-lit area, and other plants around it seem to be doing okay.
Okay. Well, you might, you know, if you really don't want to dig it up to see what's going on, I would just probably go ahead, and you might even fertilize it at this time. I wouldn't use anything with much nitrogen in it, but you might use something like a 5-10-10 or something like that to sort of encourage some good rooting.
Well, it is in an area with a lot of mulch and not, you know, heavily mulched, because I had some trees removed in that area, and so I've been planting, and so maybe there isn't enough soil down there yet.
Mm. When you say heavily mulched, are you talking more than 4 inches, or...?
In some places, yes.
Yeah. I'd really check it. The mulch really shouldn't be more than about 4 inches.
Okay.
If you're really getting a lot more mulch than that, then there may be actually some rot going on down there, or even some crown rot on the plants. So you might sort of gently dig down in there, make sure it's not buried too much.
Okay. I will look at that, and you recommend some fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay,
right,
good
thank
luck.
Thank you. Another Urbana person here, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I got some hostas that I planted last year, some small height ones, approximately 8 inches. I planted them last year. This year they did not bloom at all. In fact, they are dead.
Ooh.
I planted them on the north side in soil that's fairly moist. Mm-hmm. We did obviously have a lot less moisture this year, and I'm wondering if I'm going to have them come up next year, or if they're gone.
So when you say they're dead, it's just the foliage is gone?
The foliage is gone.
Okay.
I have three plants in different parts of the garden. Two of them are gone. One of them is still, but it's not blooming. And they're supposed to bloom now. They're the late summer, early
mm-hmm.
fall
mm-hmm.
blooming.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'd be another one of those. I wouldn't give up on them right now. I think what you could do, certainly want those guys that you, if they're still alive, it doesn't take much to sort of gently dig down there and see if there's anything to the roots.
Okay.
I mean, you should be able to find out real quick without too much effort, and even without doing too much digging, is find out if they're still alive or not.
Okay.
I mean, if it's all, you know, black or dark brown, and you'll know whether they're going to come back or not.
Should they have bloomed this year, if I planted them last year, should they have bloomed this year? They did not bloom last year.
Mm-hmm. Which, the first year, you wouldn't,
right.
you know, they might not bloom. But normally, depending on the size of the plant, normally you would think that they would go ahead and bloom the second year. But if they were somewhat small and maybe didn't do all that great that first year, then they might not flower that even the second year. But if they're growing well, you're absolutely right. I would think that they would go ahead and bloom that second year.
If they should come up next year, is there a type of fertilizer, or is there something that I can help strengthen the plant in that area?
Right. Probably just the tender, loving care things, just making sure that they're well watered during drought periods. That's probably one of the big things with those. And you could fertilize it early in the spring if you want to go that route. I probably, again, probably look at something that's fairly low in nitrogen and higher in the other two numbers of phosphorus, some potassium, something like a 5-10-10 or something along those lines. Just to try to get them going a little bit better than what they're doing now. But I think just general maintenance kind of things, you know, mulching, those kind of things. And and watch out for slugs, obviously. That's always the big thing.
And I hate them.
Yeah. I've had some people say they've had really good luck if they mulch with pine needles.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have access to anything like that, even this fall, then I think I would mulch them with that and go that route.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. So we can get one more at least to Champaign, line two. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if Sandy knew about a Madonna lily. My mother had them in the 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I can't seem to find them in the catalogs.
Oh, really? I think if you go with some of the bulb catalogs, the ones that really specialize in bulbs, I think you'll find them. Generally, they are one of those. It's planted a little. The biggest thing about those is that they're planted shallow compared to the other ones.
I see. So it's not the traditional Easter lily
that
we know.
Nope. Very pretty, but.
Another question, is it too late to fertilize the lawn and to move peonies?
No. Well, you're getting to, as far as the moving peonies, I think I would do it right away. Usually we say through the month of September to move peonies, so
okay.
I wouldn't wait much later than now. If you want to go ahead and move them and divide them, this would be better than waiting till next spring.
Right.
The other thing as far as fertilizing the lawn, no, actually, we generally think about the very last fertilization is maybe in November, and usually we think of usually after the last mowing, you'd go ahead and fertilize, and so usually that's even in November or so. No, you're certainly not too late. And actually, they found that this late fall fertilization is actually much better than trying to do an early spring fertilization.
Very good. Thank you.
Healthier for the lawn.
Okay. And Clinton, Indiana, line 4. Hello.
Hi.
Is your call there?
Uh-huh.
Yes. Go ahead.
Hi, David. Hi. You mentioned Japanese beetles. I've had problems with them, you know, over the years. And what I use on them, I was wondering what your guest thought was... Seven dust, is there?
Does
the job on them.
Yeah, that is the one insecticide we do recommend. You're absolutely right when it comes to control for Japanese beetles is Seven Dust or Seven Spray, the insecticide. So you're right, that is the one.
I use the dust and then also on, you know, for potato bugs. But you got to wait. Well, you know, you got to be careful with it.
Certainly on edible crops, you have to really watch and make sure that you use it according to label directions and wait from between the application and harvest, those kind of things. But you're right, there is some control with Seven. But unfortunately, with Japanese beetles, as you know, they keep flying in. So it's not like you just get rid of the ones that you have. Then
keep your eye
open. Yeah, boy, you're absolutely right. I know you guys in Indiana have had them longer than we've had over in Illinois. So.
Another thing, I use it on my dog for fleas.
Oh, really?
And it works.
Yeah, well.
All right, I just want to tell you.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Well, thanks very much. Well, we're going to have to stop because we're here out of time. Want to mention real quick one more time the tree thing?
Yes, on Saturday, October 21st at Illini Grove, we're going to do a tree workshop on tree care and then also do a guided tour of the new State Street Tree Trail Guide, or you can pick up the guide at that time as well.
Okay, very good. Sandy Mason, she's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. We'll have her here one more time in November, then not until 2001. I know, I feel the same way.
A rite of passing, I guess.
I guess so. Thanks very much.